Oyez, oyez, oyez. All persons having business before the Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit, are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this Honorable Court. Be seated, please. Case number 09-3002, United States of America versus Victor R. Pagano, appellant, Ms. Dyer for appellant, Mr. Barber for appellee.
Good morning.
Good morning, and may it please the court. Beverly Dyer, Assistant Federal Public Defender on behalf of Victor Papagno. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. The district court ordered restitution in this case for government, an expenditure of government resources that the government itself described at the plea hearing as staggering. The value of, there was no record evidence that the Naval Research Laboratories, the NRL's purpose, or that one of its purposes in preparing its extremely detailed inventory was to assist the prosecution in this case. That valuation...
That's what happened, isn't it? Didn't Judge Friedman say this turned out to be helpful to him?
Judge Friedman found that this inventory was necessary, but it's Judge Friedman's findings on the necessary part of it were that the Naval Research Lab, the Navy was required to account for the whereabouts of the property. The Navy was not required to account for the whereabouts of the property to the prosecution, only to the Navy. So the Navy's purpose in this was internal. There's no record evidence that its purpose in preparing this.
But it's clear that the Navy doesn't have to have in mind that the reason we're doing this is to help the prosecution. This statute doesn't require that sort of.
Disagree with that. I would say that the word participation, which is in the plain language of the statute, the MVRA, implies to take part in, and to take part in is an active verb that implies an intentional purpose in acting. And I think that distinguishes the cases that in which an employer, for example, uncovers employee fraud and investigates to uncover more fraud. That was the case in Gordon and in several of the other cases that are cited in our briefs. And in those cases, and then the employer goes on to report that to the government as a crime, and the government then uses that information. There, the employer is, even though not instructed by the prosecution to undertake the investigation in some of those cases, the employer's intent is to uncover crime and to uncover the actual facts, the extent of the crime. That's not what happened here.
Why are you saying that restitution's proper in that case?
Because there's a purpose. There's an intentional purpose to uncover crime. It's much more fundamental to the investigation and prosecution of the case. If this court upholds this kind of...
The statute doesn't speak in terms of purpose either.
I would suggest that the word participation, that
right.
Expenses incurred during a victim's participation in the investigation and the prosecution implies that purpose should be one of the requirements.
Right.
To
I'm suggesting your hypothetical may give up more than the statutory text does, at least under one theory, because suppose the internal investigation that you described with the employee trying to uncover the fraud happens before any criminal investigation.
Exactly.
How can it then be during participation in?
Because there the employer is still trying to uncover the extent of the crime and then goes on to report it. It's replacing a sort of a segment of what an investigative agency might otherwise do, such as the NCIS did in this case. But I think the difference, and I can give an example of, if let's say the government already had a list of stolen property, but the victim also prepares its own list of the stolen property, and the government goes on to say, cite that list in a sentencing memorandum. That is not the extent of the statute that Congress anticipated here. Congress enacted two different statutes for restitution, the Victim and Witness Protection Act and the Mandatory Victim Restitution Act, which is where we are under the Mandatory Act. In the Voluntary Act, which can be, the language is quite distinguishable, there the court is required to evaluate all loss, any harm to the victim caused by the crime, directly resulting from the crime, and the victim's ability to pay. And then go on to consider various other factors, including the B4 subsection that is a part of the subject of this case. But in the Mandatory Act, Congress said there is no consideration of the victim's of the defendant's resources or ability to pay. There is specific limited values for which the or costs that the victim incurs for which the defendant is required to pay. Of those, this provision that is the subject of this case, B4, is quite limited. It says during the victim's participation in the investigation or prosecution of the offense. If this court opens it up to anything that the victim does at whatever expense that the government cites or makes use of, that is far, far broader than I would suggest Congress intended in enacting such a statute that does not consider the defendant's ability to pay.
You agree that showing up for interviews, the costs of that would be covered.
If it's not just to observe, if it's
showing up to be interviewed by the FBI.
Yes.
Okay. And how about responding to a subpoena,
yes,
grand jury subpoena, the costs of complying with that. But what if it's something that's useful to the government but they haven't asked for?
That is where I think if the victim is preparing it towards, that's where I think this court can distinguish based on purpose.
There's a lot of things are going to have dual purpose, though.
Absolutely, and I'm not suggesting that if it has dual purposes, it would be excluded. Mm-hmm. I'm suggesting that there's no record evidence here that the NRL had any purpose at all to assist the prosecution in preparing this inventory. And that the extent of the resources spent on the inventory are far, far greater, even on just the list. Putting aside the valuation, which we would argue is just extreme in spending $100,000 to come up with numbers for which I know the government does not want to put a cap on the amount of the value of the property, but the government did agree in the plea agreement that the sentencing guideline provision that applied was $200,000. The valuation of $1.6 million is 8 times that value. And to the extent the government did make use of that or attempted to make use of that, that was really improper because that is not at all the proper calculation of loss under the guidelines. And it could only really be used to strong arm the defendant in plea negotiations. It is so much higher.
So what if you prepare something as the victim and you're preparing it just to find out what's going on in your own company,
mm-hmm,
but then it turns out you spend $100,000 on that or something,
mm-hmm,
and then you uncover a lot of wrongdoing and you turn it over. Is that covered? Or?
Well, we have two alternative theories. Mm-hmm. Under one, the courts have upheld that, and I'm distinguishing those cases based on the purpose of uncovering crime. And I understand that an employer might have a purpose of uncovering wrongdoing in its own company by its employees, mm-hmm, and that might then turn into criminal activity, and that then would be reported to the government. The government would make use of that information. And I would suggest that under many case laws in many circuits, but not this circuit, that has been upheld. But under our justum generis argument, I think that is narrower than what I'm suggesting that cases in other circuits have upheld. So they have upheld the kind of investigation costs that were not the subject of a request by the government to participate. But I think that those can be distinguished based on having a purpose of uncovering crime. That this inventory, at least no record evidence suggests that it did. And I think...
Remind me, what is your justum generis principle? What's the principle that's identified by the specifics that isn't captured here in the government's construction of other expenses?
I think that... The things that it suggests child care, transportation, and lost income to attend.
What do they have in common? I feel like the Sesame Street, one of these things is not like the other. One of these things doesn't belong. You know, are these common or are they?
Yeah, well, they are. They would all be subject to someone attending a court hearing or a deposition or a investigatory meeting. And I think that the courts have upheld those kinds of legal expenses, even when the victim hires a lawyer to attend meetings with government prosecutors to discuss the extent of the crime or what to do with the prosecution of the crime or how to proceed. So those kinds of expenses, I would suggest, you know, it's not just that it's an individual victim. Presumably, those people would not be submitting child care expenses.
How do you reply to the government's response to that? They, as you know, they say that what Congress is doing here is highlighting for special attention those categories, but that there was no intention that those categories be a limiting factor on our construction of other expenses. How do you reply to that?
I don't know why Congress would need to put in something as specific as child care. or I think lost income and transportation expenses suggest transportation to a meeting with the prosecutors or the investigators, not widespread travel for some other purpose. I think I do think that there's some I don't know why Congress would put those something as specific as child care in a provision like that if it was not thinking about those.
Especially things. Since those are small ticket items, usually, you know, $50, $100. This is a couple hundred thousand.
Well, not. Yeah. I think that if you have a $32 million fraud and you have a large company or a bank that's the subject of that, you might have many bank employees that attend meetings or court hearings for the purpose of testifying or for the purpose of being a part of the investigation or prosecution. And there, I think that there might be government requests to help uncover the extent of the fraud or to define it or to determine what assets are involved. So I do think that there could be a large number, even those expenses, if it's a corporate victim. Or an agency victim, as we have here, but it is distinguishable. So I just want to clarify that our ejusdem generis argument is more limited than our argument that would suggest that this case is distinguishable from the cases upholding investigatory costs. I do think that the valuation itself is staggeringly high. It is as expensive as the equipment itself. There was no reason for purposes of loss to go as far as researching individual purchase prices of all of these individual items. It could have been done and should have been done in a summary fashion. Somebody who knew something about computer equipment could have come in and put cables in boxes and said, this is 100 of this kind of cables. And that's evidenced in part by the summary of equipment, which is on the appendix on pages 48 and 49. That could have been fleshed out to something closer to 10 pages describing what AV equipment is there and what furniture is there, and then putting an estimated value on that over a 10-year period, over a past 10-year period. So I think there would have been a way for the district court to reasonably estimate loss in this case without the kind of valuation that the NRL undertook here, and that was unreasonable and unnecessary. And I see that I'm out of time. I would only add that the foreseeability requirement, I think, is somewhat linked to the necessary requirement, which is in the plain language of the statute. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Barber, good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, Jeremy Barber on behalf of the United States. Judge Friedman did not abuse his discretion by ordering restitution to NRL for the costs it incurred in reviewing, moving, inventorying, and valuing the tens of thousands of items stolen by appellant over a 10-year period. Appellant stresses the staggering nature of the expenses in this case, and I think those expenses are attributable to one thing, and that is the defendant, or the appellant. He stole over a 10-year period almost 20,000 items, and of course it would be expensive to account for those. I think perspective is appropriate considering whether this was too excessive of an inventory. Per item, NRL spent 6 minutes on each item. Less than 4 minutes per item was spent to place a value on each item.
What significance should we place on the government's concession that the range here for the plea would be, what was it, 120 to 220 or whatever that range was? What significance?
Well, the government made clear that they were not placing a cap on it. Mm-hmm. The government also said that agreeing to have it be $120,000 at a minimum reached a fair and just result in this case. And I think the intent of that is that
Once that's accomplished, what's the purpose of finding out the cost of each and every item to get it up to some number way above that?
Well, determining whether something was necessary, I think it's important to determine that at the time the expense was incurred. And at the time these expenses were incurred, it was not clear that this case would be a plea. It was not clear that even if it was a plea, that it would be a C1C plea, where the parties agreed to the amount of loss. And furthermore, as Judge Friedman suggested, this may have gone to trial, where the government's burden was to prove this amount of loss beyond a reasonable doubt. So appellant's suggestion that a summary inventory would have been sufficient would not have been proper had this gone to the jury. I don't think the government could have sustained its burden with a summary inventory. And importantly, the government...
The government in that situation, the government would have prescribed for the victim what was necessary to go to trial. What was done here was the victim, for its own purposes, decided what to do consistent with what government regulations appeared to require or what they felt was necessary, not what the prosecutor had prescribed as necessary in order to either support an investigation or to support a prosecution. There was no connection between need for prosecution and investigation and what was done. None.
I respectfully disagree, Your Honor. I believe the prosecutor's comments about NRL incurring these expenses for, to some extent, for their own purposes, was directed towards the moving and the inventorying aspect and not the valuation aspect. I think that comports with common sense. Appellant has not presented why NRL would need to place the actual retail value on these items, but for to assist the prosecution. And to the extent this court is interested, I can present evidence outside of the record to address that issue. But I think even apart from that, I think common sense suggests.
Why don't we go back to the record?
Certainly, I think we'll
there is
reasonable.
Nothing in the record, which was my point, and you know you can't present things outside of the record. I'm reading the record. There is nothing that makes the kind of connection that I thought was necessary.
It is a reasonable inference from this evidence, the amounts from the fact that this inventory was done, that the government needed this for purposes of determining loss. It is undisputed that the government needs to account for loss, that the court would need to
the government needed something. The question is whether they needed all that was done.
Well, again, I think the government's perspective
because,
is that...
Because your theory seems to be one of consequential harm. Any consequences fall under the restitution provision of the statute. That seems a pretty broad reading of the statute. And that sweeps in an awful lot of things.
The government.
All you need is a good imagination. You can come up with a whole lot of dollars here, there, and everywhere.
The government believes that a restitution is linked to the words of the statute, which in this case that they be necessary and tied to participation in the investigation of the offense. And the expenses that were incurred in this case were intended to assist the prosecution in answering the two questions that were unanswered.
As I recall, the way you briefed the necessary was that that was a finding of fact. Is that right? Isn't necessary? Isn't that a mixed question here? What's necessary?
I believe Your Honor may be correct that there may be mixed questions of law and fact in this case, but I think regardless of this
on necessary, on what's necessary as well.
I believe that could be correct, and I think under either standard the government would prevail.
How is enduring participation, especially some of the hypotheticals that will come up? Suppose a company does an internal investigation, and then, because it suspects some wrongdoing by its employees, and then turns the results of that over to the government. How is the initial internal investigation during participation in the investigation? The word during and the word participation.
Well, I think it's important to note that the investigation in this case began on August 14th, 2007, which was when...
I understand in this case, but this the precedent that's going to be set in this case presumably will govern internal investigations generally.
I don't know that this...
Would you divide a temporally before between an internal investigation that occurs while the criminal investigation's ongoing from one that occurred before the criminal investigation?
I don't think this court needs to address that issue because this case involves no reimbursable costs that were incurred before the investigation was begun. The statute does not mention whether investigation refers to official criminal investigation or not. Mm-hmm. And
assume it's official criminal investigation. Let's focus on participation. I would have thought participation means things you do when you're ordered or requested by the government. So responding to a subpoena, showing up for an interview, those kinds of expenses. Why is it participation when the government hasn't asked you? Suppose, hypothetically, the government, the criminal prosecutors, FBI, what have you, have not asked you to do anything and you just do it on your own and give it to the government. Why is that participation?
I think there's four reasons. First, the text of the statute is broad. It does not say participation required by the government. It simply says participation. I think the purpose of the statute, which was to...
Well, we have to give meaning to participation, is what Judge Kavanaugh is asking you. That's
certainly
not broad.
And intending
participation
to
is narrow.
And in attempting to do that, this court should look to the purpose of the statute, which was to broaden opportunities for victims' restitution.
Consequential?
I believe B4, most courts who have addressed this say that the costs in B4 are separate and apart from consequential damages, and other expenses is meant to be interpreted broadly. So that brings me to the third point.
All consequential costs.
Not all consequential costs. All costs incurred.
So if it's not going to be all consequential costs, then participation has to be given some meaning and narrowed down, because your argument seems to just say all consequential costs.
Well, Your Honor, respectfully, our argument is that it has to be all costs incurred during participation that are necessary. And that actually gets me to the fourth point, which is to address Judge Kavanaugh's question, that to read narrowly the term participation would render the word necessary superfluous, because by definition, if the government orders you to do it, it is necessary. So Congress would not have needed to add the word necessary in that context.
What if it's requested?
Well, again, I think if the government requests...
Oftentimes, you'll show up for an FBI interview. It's not a subpoena, obviously. It's just a request, but you show up. Presumably, this is meant to cover that.
Again, I think the fact that Congress intended the word participation to be read broadly, and the limits on that, there are limits, and those are that it be necessary, and that is a determination.
I would have thought, going to the text, you said it's broad, but if Congress wanted to cover this, presumably they could easily say cost the victim incurred in uncovering wrongdoing or by the defendant, or cost the victim incurred in investigating wrongdoing by the defendant. There are lots of easy ways to get at this. This is something of a bank shot.
Well, Your Honor, the Congress did use broad language, and all courts that have interpreted it have read it broadly.
Well, not all. I mean, the district court in Virginia didn't.
That's true. And with regard to their adjustum generis argument, which I believe appellant is adopting to a certain extent in this case, I think that reading is too narrow for the simple reason that they define all of these terms to apply to attendance at proceedings. And interpreting the statute that narrowly would essentially render part of the clause of B4 superfluous, because the clause already accounts for attendance at proceedings related to the offense. So if that's all Congress meant were costs incurred at attendance at proceedings, then it would not have needed to add the cost expenses incurred during participation in the investigation and prosecution of the offense.
Does it matter if the government or the victim hires some very, very expensive law firm to do the internal investigation?
I think that would be a question for the district court in determining whether the costs were necessary. In this case, that's not what happened. And
although this was a pretty extraordinary cost, certainly neither side was anticipating costs like this at the initial hearing with Judge Friedman.
Well, to be clear, the defendant concedes that he participated with this investigation since the moment that he was arrested. For a year prior to him being charged officially at the arraignment proceeding, his counsel conceded, "I've worked closely with the government during this time." And I think it's a fair inference from that he was aware that this investigation had proceeded. Perhaps he had not contemplated that it would
What I was saying at the initial hearing with Judge Friedman, there was no contemplation of restitution in anything close to the amount that it ultimately proved to be, right?
That is correct. The parties in the plea agreement did indicate that the court would decide the appropriate restitution under the statute. Statute including
that initial hearing, there was discussion. We're close. It's going to be easy. It shouldn't be too much.
Certainly, at that point, the probation office had not contacted the victim to ask the victim what their costs were. And the plea agreement left that determination to the court, and that plea agreement was meant to be the entirety of the agreement, so any statements made in court otherwise would not limit the plea agreement. And the plea agreement, the defendant specifically said, "I leave this to the court to determine the full extent of restitution in this case."
Was the inventory prepared to help determine loss under the guidelines?
The record, to a certain extent, is silent on that, and I can make representations if the court is requesting them on that point. But I think it is a fair inference from the record that we have that the government was required to establish loss. The government could not have done it on its own, as appellant establishes.
The inventory doesn't do loss the way the guidelines do it.
Well, I think, as the government explained both at the plea and at the arraignment and at the sentencing memorandum, the government couldn't have established loss as the guidelines intend them, which was actual loss at the time of the theft, for the simple reason that this theft occurred over a 10-year period, and the defendant did not keep track of when each item was stolen. So there was no way to determine what the value was at the time of loss. You could imagine a particular computer, if stolen in 2005, would have been valueless because it was outdated. But if stolen in 1998, would have full value. The full actual purchase value would be the appropriate value. And the government had no way to determine that. And so reasonably so, the government did the best that it could, which was determine what the purchase price was. That would provide the outer limit of possible loss, and then as the government suggested to the trial court, you know, we will try to convince you that this is the appropriate value, but even if not, the easiest thing to do in this case might to apply a ratio to that number. And so certainly this actual retail value would be relevant to the court, even if it rejects it at some extent, it would be relevant to coming up with what the actual value was. So I do think that these costs were necessary. They were incurred during participation because they were, it's a reasonable inference that they were intended to assist or collaborate with the prosecution in determining what
the amount
was.
Didn't the criminal investigators have done the same inventory?
They couldn't have. For, if you look at page 52 of the appendix, which lists what exactly NRL did, NRL looked to the original purchase orders, the purchase card transactions, supply store records, and other internal documents to establish what the retail value was. And the NCIS or the government couldn't have done that unless they had those records.
Okay, so they could have subpoenaed the records, and then, but they could have then done the inventory. That's, the FBI does that all the time, right? They'll subpoena all the records from someone, and then they internally will figure out, here's the inventory of all the loss that was caused or all the items that were stolen or the fraud that was committed?
Two responses to that. NRL, the supply staff at NRL certainly have expertise on these. They are the people who would be able to accomplish this with the least amount of time with the least amount of money.
Least amount of time, okay, but necessary would suggest it's something that the criminal investigators couldn't do.
Well, there's also no way to determine if subpoenaing all these records, pulling the purchase orders for each of these items would have been any less costly to NRL than it would have been for them to pull them and type into a database the value. It would have taken just as much time to pull each purchase order and put them together and bind them and send them to the government.
If the FBI does it, or in this case the NCIS does it, then there's no restitution for the amount. But if the entity in question does it, there is restitution.
If the entity in question compiles all of the records to provide to the FBI or the NCIS to do this, then certainly the cost that they spent compiling this would be reimbursed. And there's no indication that that would have been any cheaper in this case. The government also did indicate that it did make attempts to mitigate the costs here. During the plea colloquy at page 6, the government said, you know, we could have gone back and made this audit perfect. We could have dealt with all of these issues that arose, but we didn't think that that made sense because of the posture of this case at this time. So the idea that the government was out, or NRL was out, spending money recklessly, I think is belied by the record. Given the staggering amount of items stolen by the appellant, the costs were reasonable on a per-item basis. If the appellant had stolen just 1,000 items, the personnel cost to inventory them on a prorated basis would have only been $8,000. And that certainly, in that context, seems reasonable. Of course, the number seems large, but that is due, again, to appellant's actions in this case. It was a staggering series of thefts, and so, of course, accounting for that would also require a staggering cost.
Are you aware of any indication in the legislative history that Congress was thinking in that, with respect to this provision about internal investigation costs?
What I can, in Senate Report 104-179, which is the Senate Judiciary Report, which the report is referenced in the Amato case, and according to the House Conference Report, that is the official legislative history of this act, it defines this provision as covering expenses incurred during participation. It doesn't separate out, so in response to the justum generis argument, it says this B4 is intended to cover expenses incurred, and it just uses the word expenses.
But nothing refers specifically to this kind of expense.
Pre or post investigation, but it does suggest that it is broad, all expenses incurred, not just expenses incurred at attendance of proceedings. And if the court has no further questions, we would ask the court to affirm the judgment below.
Thank you very much. Ms. Dyer, I believe you have 2 minutes and 45 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. I did have a couple of points, and Judge Kavanaugh, you referred to one of them. I think that the demonstration of the fact that this was not the NRL's purpose is that the government was not even thinking of this as restitution at the plea hearing. The government thought that restitution was going to involve the few items that were not returned, the few pieces of computer equipment that were not returned. That's what was apparent that both parties thought. I wanted to just point out as a counterexample of statutory language that is broad. In the Victims and Witness Protection Act, for certain identity theft crimes under subsection, this is 18 U.S.C. 3663, A6, for certain identity theft crimes, that the defendant shall pay an amount equal to the value of time reasonably spent by the victim in an attempt to remediate the intended or actual harm incurred by the victim from the offense. That's broad language in the Voluntary Act that is not the type of language that we have here. demonstrating that Congress knew how to draft language that was appropriate when it did. The government admits that the record is silent on whether or not the NRL's purpose or whether it did, in fact, prepare this to assist the government in establishing loss, and it is the government's burden to prove that the restitution is appropriate. And I'm a little bit concerned about my own taxpayer dollars if the government is actually saying that it would cost the NRL as much as $160,000 just to gather records to provide the FBI to assess the value of equipment that is worth no more than $200,000. Thank you. And if there are no further questions, I would this case to the court. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Case is submitted.